And you think back to 2013 when the team lost all of those games, and Sports Illustrated, they came out with the cover, George Springer in the throwback uni. 2017 World Series champions. How did they do that?
Well, the Astros one out away from proving that there is no Sports Illustrated cover jinx. As a last hope for the Dodgers is Corey Seager.
This is another Astros podcast.
Pitch on the way. Ground ball right side into the shift to his left. Altuve has it in short right. Throws to first. And the Astros are 2017 World Series champions.
Game 7 on the road at Dodger Stadium. And the Astros prevail. World Series champions. Who would have ever believed?
Welcome. Good evening, everybody. Bill Brown and the skipper, A.J. Hinch, of the world champion Houston Astros. Good to have you with us tonight here at Pluckers on Shepherd. What a night. The first night anybody's come on this show as a world champion. A.J., congratulations.
Wow. Yeah, it doesn't get old. I'd like to do it again already. But it's been an incredible offseason, short offseason, and every day since the World Series, someone has come up to me in this great city and said thank you, or said congratulations, or said job well done. And I think this city likes being a world championship city.
Well, you can just see it by the turnout here tonight. And it's going to be a short off season for you, but a very enjoyable one so far, hasn't it been?
It has been. You know, we've done a lot of different things. You see our players all over the world, really, trying to tell our story. And we've got a lot of different awards that were given out the last couple of weeks. We've got a really short offseason, but sign me up for next offseason being really short, because it means that you played till the final day. We played into November. And like I said, no matter whether it's been sporting events, whether it's been gas stations, whether it's been grocery stores, I think people are still wearing our jerseys as I see tonight. And we're still relishing in this deal.
Yeah, there's a lot of orange here tonight. Hey, folks, speaking of awards, Manager of the Year by Baseball America.
That's incredible.
And, very, very well deserved. You know, a lot of people get credit, of course, when a team wins it all, but there were so many people involved in this, right?
There were so many people, and obviously even beyond the uniform personnel and the advanced scouts that we used during the World Series, like literally giving advice on specific matchups that were utilized, pretty incredible to watch the work of an entire organization. Obviously, we get to be the face of it. We get to be on the field and be a part of it, and certainly the players, the coaches, all deserve a lot of credit. When you get a World Series championship, it goes much deeper than who got the biggest hit or who got the last out, but those are pretty cool too.
Well, there's so much to digest. We'll be taking questions from around the room here tonight, questions on social media tonight and on Twitter. You can reach us at #AstroLine for your questions for A.J. Hinch tonight. But as you look back at things, and I think a lot of people here in the room might be curious as to the routine you have for a postseason game. You talked about the advanced scouts and things of that nature, but how much is it altered from your regular season routine of preparing for
it's
a game?
It's nothing like, preparing for a game is one thing. I think just dealing with the day-to-day. To give you a good example, like we started at 5 o'clock on the West Coast, so I can go on the Dodgers side of when we were played in L.A., my media started at 1 o'clock, and I did 2 hours of media from 1 to 3 before we even got to batting practice. When that happens, and whether it's a 30-minute meeting with the broadcasters, a 30-minute meeting with our media, with our local media, a 15, 20-minute podium session, that's just to get to the media. And I remember in Game 1 of the World Series, we played 2 hours and 20-some minutes. And I'm thinking to myself, I did just as much media as you guys played. You know, so I felt like I had the harder job of the two of them. We lost Game 1, but it was incredible to watch the attention that comes with the World Series. The preparation for the games, it is so much more specific than even during the season. During the season, I'm trying to manage maybe a 7-game homestand, or I'm managing where you're playing 14 out of 15 games. This is 7 games. Your life depends on it. You feel there's off days in the middle of it. You can see that I use the same pitchers over and over again, or the same position players over and over again, and everybody buys in that you're just trying to win today's game, and that doesn't go in one ear and out the other, you know, like it might sometimes during the season, because the difference between winning Game 2, Marwin Gonzalez hits the homer, we come back late in the game, going back to Houston down 2-0 versus being tied 1-1 literally might have won the World Series for us.
Yep. Well, you had 2 consecutive 7-game series. That's something you never have during the regular season.
Yeah, I don't really want any more of those either. Like, those are really hard on the manager.
They're hard on the fans, too.
Right.
Anybody have a tough time with that at all? Yeah. Cardiologist got involved.
Yeah, we had two game sevens in the Yankee series. Game six was a game seven,
yeah.
even though it was called game six.
A game five here, just such an epic game. As you look back on that one, there was so much to take in. Yeah. It's going to take months to fully analyze
that
game.
We should do a whole documentary on game five. It's the best game of my entire life, best game in World Series history. Kershaw versus Keuchel, 25 runs scored, exactly how you would have mapped it out. Us relative experts, maybe not be experts anymore, but it was so many twists and turns, and even down to the end, and Taylor gets a base hit off of Davinsky, and all of a sudden we needed to have the walk-off hit, and then, you know, nobody better than Alex Bregman to come up at the end of the game and get the base hit to score Fisher, and we're celebrating.
You know what was fun to watch in the World Series film premiere was that shot from up the tunnel as Correa and Bregman came off the field after that game. They looked like they'd played for about a half an hour. They were right. Fresh as daisies at that point.
Yeah, I remember when I was like 22 also. Like, I had a little bit more energy when I was 22. But these guys were so into the World Series. Watching our players like rise to the occasion and be themselves and laugh and joke and dance. And when you watch the premiere or the documentary, you're going to see George Springer singing during batting practice. You're going to see Jose Altuve joking around with everybody. Our players were so much in the element. And as, like, you know, a parent of two girls, I think that was a proud father moment for me where I was like, these guys get it. They know how to play. They know how to be themselves. And did they perform ever?
And Bregman was so clutch. I don't know if I've seen a young guy at his age do that very much on the world stage in a World Series, right?
No, just ask him. I mean, he'll tell you. Bregman is incredibly gifted competitor, and he's hungry for more. Like, this is a guy that you can't get out of the batting cage, or you can't get him off the away from the field. We've had to tell him, you don't need to come to the field at 11 a.m. for a 7 o'clock game. And most of the time, you want to get your young players there, but he loves the game. He loves his teammates. He loves competing. And you know, I had an old coach of mine once tell me, when you're in a game situation where you're trying to win, you got to beat him with a single. And when Bregman in game five got the single, he didn't try to hit a homer. He didn't try to hit the Crawford box. He didn't try to be too big a hero. He hit a little small single that changed that entire series, you know, for the rest of the series. And it shows great maturity, and it's why he's one of the favorites on our team.
Well, just an amazing, amazing year. And now I'm sure you're probably trying not to think ahead to next year at this point. You have to have some time to enjoy it, right?
Well, I'm going to be the bad guy one of these days and say, I don't want to talk about the World Series anymore. I want to talk about next year. And that probably comes after Fan Fest. I mean, we got to live it up a little bit longer, but we will talk about next year. The good news is we don't have a lot of heavy lifting this winter. We're going to return mostly the same team, maybe a guy or two that will add some young kids that we're excited about. But I'm not sure when, but at some point there probably will be the turn off the late night talk shows, turn off the world tour and try to do it again in 2018.
You've had some coaching staff losses, Carlos Beltran retiring now. And that's a given with any team at this point of an off season. But just to speak to Carlos and the contribution he made, how would you capitalize that?
Well, I think for us, you know, when you have success and then you also have guys at the end of their career, we knew Beltran was going to retire. He didn't publicly announce it, but there was a general feel on our team that he was going to retire. And he was an extension of the coaching staff. He was somebody that embraced the players and did a really good job of being a stable presence, that calm influence. We needed it when we got swept in New York in the championship series, when just to take a deep breath. And he's the guy who's saying, hey, everything's going to be okay. You know, and I think that contribution goes a long way when you've earned that credibility over the course of his career and over the course of the season. The coaches that have come and gone, you know, when you win, you're going to get guys taken away. Some guys, Cora gets the managing job, takes CB with him. Alonzo Powell gets promoted and goes out to San Francisco, and Rich Dower retires. And so it, you know, they're it's going to be a new look and a new challenge for me to get these coaches up and running. And might be competing against our own guys. We're going to have Cora in Boston. We might have Beltran in New York. We got Astros everywhere now.
Well, you got Joey Espada now moving in to be the bench coach. You had a relationship with him before this, correct?
I did. We got drafted together with the Oakland A's and played in the minor leagues together. And then I followed his career. I tried to hire him a couple different times. Really good influence on our players, and is going to be very organized, very good for me. He was the third base coach of the Yankees, and if you can be the third base coach of the Yankees, you can be just about anything. I don't know if anybody in here has ever booed a third base coach, but I have. But it's tough. It's a tough job. So I think him coming over is a natural progression for us. He's got relationships with a number of our players, specifically the Latin infielders, which will be nice. Alex Cintron gets added. He was our translator last season, but we used him a little bit more on the baseball side. He played over a decade in the big league, so that's a good addition at first. And then Jeff Albert and Doug White are two coaches that were in the minor leagues, worked their way through the system. We got to stay within, which is always nice to reward from within and get a couple coaches up here that have been in your own minor league system, have relationships with players. But that's a lot of guys that we're gonna meet together in January, and I'll crack the whip and get them going.
When you welcomed the newcomers on the team a year ago, with McCann coming in and Reddick and the others, Charlie Morton was such a big contributor, did you begin to feel at that point, once you took that club to spring training, that this might be a special year?
Yes, I did. Well, once I knew I had to sort of break it to McCann, you're going to bat 7th, 8th, or 9th. I'm going to break it to Yuli, you're going to bat 7th, 8th, or 9th to start the year, and then he moved up to the 5-hole. I'm telling Josh Reddick against lefties, you're going to hit potentially 9th. Marwin Gonzalez is going to hit 8th or 9th. I was sort of conditioning them all to hit down in the order. When you're having those conversations with guys that a couple of years ago were hitting 3rd or 4th or 5th, that's telling you have a pretty good lineup. The biggest key this whole season was getting into the season healthy. Having Dallas Keuchel go 6-0, 7-0, 8-0, whatever he was at the beginning of the season, coming off that injury answered a lot of questions that we had going into the season. Lance McCullers, same thing. We needed to be healthy to get into the season, and we did. We ended up with 60 wins before the All-Star break, and that set us up to have such a big lead that we started talking about like a clinching number way too early for me, for my taste, but the players really felt like we were going to win the division once we got to July.
Back in 04 and 05, Lance Berkman talked about when the Astros were striving for a wild card spot, and they really had to push it hard right down to the end, the fact that those were the equivalent of playoff games there.
Right.
You didn't have that.
Right.
Does that kind of worry you as a manager going into the playoffs that you didn't have?
A little bit, but what we did have is we went to play Texas, which I don't care what records are. Those are playoff games to Texas and to Houston. Then we go to Boston, and when we were in Boston, we had a chance to knock them out of the AL East division race if things worked our way with the Yankees. And so we had something to play for. In Fenway, there's a lot of environment there. You're going to play. It was like a mini playoff game. And we needed to get ready because we at that time, we might have played Boston in the first round. We ended up playing them. So I think for me, there was a lull, and it was called the month of August, where we didn't play very well. And I think once we got past that, we got Correa back healthy. We trade for Verlander and Maven. McCullers comes back. It became a little bit more. September was a little bit more, consistent with the way that we normally play.
It just seemed that the team really had that focus in September.
Well, we wanted to win the division. We're tired of the division going to Texas. I mean, I think that was like this team really wanted to win the division, wanted to take care of our own business. The wild card is cool and all, but we'd raised our standard, raised our sight line a little bit. So once September hit, there was a countdown. I mean, we knew we could clinch in the first couple weeks of September, which is unheard of, and we played well enough to do it.
A.J. Hinch, our guest, will have more after this on the Astros Radio Network.
So you don't want to just challenge Judge here. Obviously, one of the most prolific power hitters in baseball at this stage.
Struck him out on a slider his last time. 3-2. And Judge lines this over the leap of Correa and in the left field. Around third and coming home is Bird. The throw to the plate by Gonzalez on one hop. The tag by McCann. Bird is out. Inning over.
The accuracy of an infielder with the quick release. A two-hand tag by McCann. Perfect execution. You can't do it any better.
Robert Ford and Steve Sparks describing ALCS Game 1. On that play at the plate with two outs in the top of the fifth inning, the Astros leading 2-0, a big play in that game by Marwin Gonzalez. A.J. Hinch is our guest here on Astroline, brought to you by Carbach Brewing from Plucker's Wing Bar. And we're available at 99.1 HD2 FM as well as Sports Talk 790 tonight. A.J., the team really played well defensively throughout the playoffs. Marwin with that play, some plays by Josh Reddick, Bregman. This was almost a clinic defensively for this club in the postseason, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think our defense got a little bit overshadowed by you know, our offense. Obviously, our offense was really good, best in the league, and you know, the high-end pitching, especially after we got Verlander, was talked about a lot. There was conversation about our bullpen, obviously, with was very good during the regular season, and then the starters came over and did some bullpen work in the postseason, and all along that whole time, our defense was playing really well, and to have some of the plays that are made, especially in the postseason, every out matters, every 90-foot matters, the difference between holding a guy down the line and Marwin Gonzalez goes to the line and holds him to a single, that's a big deal, all the way to some of these plays that Bregman made throwing home or Reddick made throwing home, or some pirouetting plays that Correa made, some of the plays that Altuve made. Those plays in the postseason, you know, are almost worth two outs. And to have our guys consistently show up and do well was the difference between winning some of these close games and maybe not.
Lauren Blackwell is with us here. She's a content producer and host at Minute Maid Park. Lauren, you'll be roaming around tonight getting questions from people.
That's right. If people have questions for AJ, there's some of our shooting stars walking around, so make sure you get your questions to them. AJ, good to see you. We have some questions for you already. I don't think anyone's ever going to get tired of talking or hearing about Game 5 of the World Series. Have you ever been involved in a game that exciting?
Never. And I don't know if I ever will again, no matter how long I'm in the game, because the expectation before that game was score a couple runs to get to Kershaw, and we didn't realize it was going to take 13 to win. And some of the emotions of falling behind, you know, when Kershaw gets the lead, just getting back to tied, what we felt like was a great accomplishment. And at 4-4, that game had barely even started. There was a lot more action left. So the emotional swings back and forth, the mistakes that we made, that we capitalized on their mistakes, they capitalized on our mistakes, and it was literally two teams throwing haymakers at one another until the final out.
Karen from Houston wants to know, AJ, has it sunk in yet? I think she said she pinches herself daily. I think we all have. So has it sunk in yet?
It's sunk in because, you know, it's hard not to. You can't get away from it, and I love that part of it is that everybody is connected to this, whether it was Hurricane Harvey, whether it was going through the lean years as Astros, whether it's connecting with a player. Our guys are very personable. They're always out there with the community. Somebody somewhere has a connection to this team. And then when you go through and you win the World Series, there's great pride in that. So I think it's sunk in because there hasn't been a day since the World Series ended that we haven't talked about, or that we haven't smiled about it, or that we haven't reminisced about it.
We can talk about 2017 forever. Right. Moving on to next year, Tyler from Sam Houston State wants to know, are there any free agent relievers that you might have your eye on?
So I have my eye on all of them. I think it's a matter of whether we agree that it's the right fit. You know, coming back next season, we do have the majority of our team coming back. And I think the big question will be in the rotation, how the back end of the rotation fills out. We have Brad Peacock. We have Joe Musgrove. We have Colin McHugh coming back. You know, some of those guys are going to go in the bullpen. Joe Musgrove did that this year. Francis Martez, a young kid, will get another opportunity. How that plays out will impact how many relievers we need. In an ideal world, we'd have a left-handed reliever, an additional one to Tony Sipp. We'll see how the back end goes. I think Ken Giles is a terrific closer. I don't think it should scar him too much about how the postseason or how the World Series went. I love the way that Will Harris and Chris Davinsky are kind of are relievers that can float from the sixth inning to the ninth inning, but there'll be a guy or two that we'll be in on to try to find a puzzle piece that fits the group down there.
Awesome. Thanks, AJ. Fans, if you're listening at home, you can also submit your questions for AJ on Twitter using hashtag AstroLine. Brownie?
Sarah Kincard is here to handle that with social media. And Sarah, do you have anything for us yet?
Sure. Emily wants to know, she wants to tap into the clubhouse a little bit, who is the biggest joker on the team?
So the biggest joker, I think everything goes through George Springer in that clubhouse because of the energy that he provides and the music that he plays, and he's the guy that'll call everybody out. I think most jokes are played on Jake Mariznick. So he and Alex Bregman's pretty close because they're both special in their own ways. But our clubhouse has an oval shaped clubhouse, which is great that they all feel a part of this little circle. And it doesn't matter. If you walk in that clubhouse and you're having a bad day, George Springer is probably the guy that's going to get you out of it.
Awesome.
Sarah, you probably remember about mid-afternoon one day this season when the group of guys came out into short center field and gathered around Brian McCann for a little ceremony retiring Carlos Beltran's glove. Have you ever seen that before?
I have never seen that before. That was something else. I'm not sure whose idea was that. Was that Brian McCann's idea?
I don't know, but it was very well played.
You know, I don't think anyone quite wants to. They should have told me about it because I had plans to play Beltran in left field like 2 days later. We should have postponed because we had to have a resurrection after the funeral. But that does show. I mean, there was nobody safe in that clubhouse that was going to get, you know, told that or called out, so to speak. And that ceremony, McCann, you know, he did a great job officiating it. I think the players played into it very well. Beltran thought that was hilarious, and it was another example of how close this team got.
And I think we've heard a lot about that. We've read a lot about it. We don't experience it the way you do, but it obviously was one of those seasons when things were just about perfect in the clubhouse, right?
Well, I think everybody experiences it just in different ways. Like, if you think of your best friends where you can be yourself, you can joke, you can laugh, you can make a stupid joke, you can not brush your hair, you can not feel like you're at your best, and you feel completely comfortable. That's essentially what we had in the clubhouse with 25 guys. So we had team dinners on the road that were organized by Beltran in Seattle and McCann in Atlanta and Gregerson in Chicago. And, you know, that happens all the time around the league, and you'll have a sprinkling of guys that'll show up and they'll have dinner together. But it was virtually 25 out of 25 guys and all the coaches and me, and you're required to go. I mean, you were expected to go subtly because you're a part of the team, and I'd never been a part of that consistent of a team. I've been a part of groups of 10 that go have dinner together. You know, when someone has to pick up the tab for a group of 40, that's a real team.
That's a tab. Well, I was going to ask you about that when you were a player. You've already answered it. Because it just seemed to many of us to be so rare to have that kind of a group get along that well together. We go back to the 70s, you know, with the fighting Oakland A's, and Phil Garner tells
the
story.
We had a few fights behind the scenes. We weren't all like, brothers have fights too, you know. But you know what it was is the position players and the pitchers all integrated together, which you know, sometimes you can have a team that the position players hang with position players and the pitchers hang with pitchers, but you know, whether it's Altuve's a great connector in the clubhouse and McCann's a great connector and Colin McHugh and they're Lance McCullers, these guys do a great job of not having just their boys be the guys that they're similar to. You know, I'd walk in the clubhouse sometime and you'd see, you know, a young kid, Michael Feliz, right-handed Dominican Republic pitcher, sitting over by Josh Reddick. And you would walk in and you would see Carlos Beltran at 40 years old, you know, hanging with 21-year-old Alex Bregman. It was fun to see that there were no, you know, stereotypes in our clubhouse. It was just a culture of trying to help each other.
And a lot of work goes into screening players before you acquire them to bring them in from the outside. All those guys seem to be a tremendous fit this year.
They were, and it comes from different ways. It's no one size fits all because, you know, for me, I think I used the phrase, like, we need some adults in the room when I was talking to Jeff about adding to our clubhouse. And what I meant by that was just some guys that had experienced a little bit and had been there a little bit. And I was talking about Carlos Beltran. And then the front office, you know, literally out of nowhere, signs Josh Reddick and says, you know what, this guy, and they did their homework, and they knew he left-handed bat was going to replace some of our left-handed bats, had a little edge to him. They'd done their homework with some of the background and the medical. And he turned out to be a great presence in our clubhouse. He was the original guy that brought the belt that everybody was celebrating with, and he had a great vibe about himself. He will call you out if you're not ready to play or if you're not playing the game the right way. He's a little bit of the muscle that we needed in that clubhouse. And then we trade for McCann. I've never been on a team I've never been on a good team that didn't have a great catcher as far as a stable force. He doesn't have to hit the most home runs. He doesn't have to throw every runner out, but there's a stability that's behind the plate. And so whether it was, you know, my request to try to get a veteran like Beltran or the front office is like, you know, this Charlie Morton guy's pretty good. This Josh Reddick guy's pretty good. We get McCann, and all of a sudden the partnership worked to have a very special team.
Sarah?
Speaking of new faces in the clubhouse, AJ, you mentioned Charlie Morton. And Sherry on Twitter would like to know, with Charlie Morton's great finish, where do you see him next year?
I see him probably starting the third, fourth, or fifth game of the year. You know, I think his best attributes is that he's very consistent throughout. He gets overlooked a lot because you know, he doesn't have the flair of some of the guys at the top of the rotation. And, you know, he came with a little fanfare because of the fact that he missed most of the previous season with injury. But he rolls out good start after good start, time after time. And to have Charlie Morton as a fourth or fifth starter is really a luxury. And you know, the postseason in the World Series, him getting the last out was pretty incredible. But we're gonna have him start one of those first five games.
A.J. Hinch, our guest of the world champion Houston Astros. More after this on the Astros Radio Network.
So with one out, that'll bring up Chase Headley, the DH. I don't know how many times a DH has batted ninth. And on the hands, hit out to right field. Backing up is Reddick. He's on the track, and he makes the catch and pounds into the wall.
What a play by Reddick in right field.
He may have taken a home run away there, Steve. It would have been high off that wall.
And Headley, with a rip to right field, makes the second out. And that'll bring up the leadoff hitter, Brett Gardner. And on the hands and ripped into right field. That's a base hit. It's going to be extra bases for Gardner. Drops the left shoulder, wheels to second base. And he's going to take off for third. Strong throw from Correa to third base. The tag by Bregman. And he's out of here. Out number three of the third inning on a great throw by Correa. And down go the Yankees here in the top of the third frame.
Two of the big plays, those came from game two of the ALCS as the Houston Astros knocked off the New York Yankees, as you know, in that series. The 2018 spring training schedule gets underway February 23rd at the ballpark of the Palm Beaches. Make your plans now to see the World Series champion Houston Astros. For all there is to see and do, visit thepalmbeaches.com. And, of course, AJ and the guys broke in that facility last year, and things went very well at spring. We saw a lot of you down there for the spring training games, and it was a wonderful place to enjoy and a brand new venue. Had you ever been to West Palm Beach in the old days when the Braves were there, AJ?
No, I'd never been there, but it turned into a great home for us. It was a game changer because of the travel. And, you know, we didn't have our entire team there for the spring training because of the WBC. We had a lot of guys on Team Puerto Rico, Team USA. We had guys spread out all over the world. So it was nice to have a central home where the Mets and playing in Port St. Lucie, a 30-mile drive was deemed a long ride. Which in Florida, you know, the previous season in Kissimmee, I'd probably put 6,000 or 7,000 miles on a rental car, just driving around Florida to all these games. So having an ability to get home for dinner or get to a restaurant for dinner after a game and not get the wear and tear of a rigorous spring training, that was a game changer for us to be in West Palm.
And a chance to build the team unity. I think at that point we heard a lot about chemistry. I don't particularly like that word, but whatever word you want to use, it happened in West Palm this year.
It does, right? And we've spent a lot of time on sort of that team camaraderie and that culture that we talk about, where we start the day with a lot of a team meeting, and it's a little lighthearted, and we'll introduce some of the younger players, and we'll have them do some things, and we'll have a shooting contest around March Madness, or we'll have a golf match that's set up for some of the relievers, or we'll do things that'll connect the clubhouse and get them to get to know some of the newcomers. And we'll have a veteran pay for it all the time. Those are the guys that get the big checks, and we have a lot of fun with it. But it you know, we're around each other for 45 consecutive days leading into the season before we go on this 6-month. 7-month, almost 8-month excursion. So it's a lot of time with these guys that we've got to be one unit if we expect to be good.
And those things you do in spring training really helps when a Francis Martez comes to the big leagues. It helps that he's done some bonding that previous spring.
Right, and I think there it gets them comfortable in front of the room. I mean, if there's one of the most intimidating things you'll do is stand up in front of a major league clubhouse and tell them about yourself and get quizzed about your likes and dislikes and your history and your past. And I usually have a little bit of info on these guys that'll embarrass them a little bit or at least open them up a little bit. You know, there may be a time or two where they've got to tell a story. I know a story about them that they have to recite, stuff like that. So, you know, whether it's a young kid who you know, is going to be somebody like Alex Bregman the year before who was going to be on our team, or whether it's a minor league free agent, Juan Centeno, who came from different organizations, ended up getting a couple of game-winning hits, was on our World Series roster. We need to know these guys from the get-go if we want to be a team that we expect to be.
Lauren, you have any more questions yet from the audience?
Yeah, AJ, you know, you were talking about spring training and how it's a good time to see a lot of the younger guys. Pete from Houston wants to know who in the minors has caught your eye or you're looking forward to seeing again in West Palm.
You know, we'll see if they get invited, but there's last year was like guys like Derek Fisher and Tyler White and AJ Reed the year before, and there's always going to be somebody that's going to surprise. I am looking forward to seeing Kyle Tucker. You know, we had Preston Tucker, his brother, and we still do in the big leagues and in AAA last year. So he's a young kid that gets asked about on all these trades. He gets talked about on all the prospect lists. He went to the Arizona Fall League. I've never been around him a ton, but he's a guy that I'm interested in getting to know. Forrest Whitley's a kid that is really young. I'm not sure he'll come to big league camp, but he will get noticed. I mean, part of it's because I think he's like 6'8 or 6'9 as a 19-year-old kid. The other part is he throws close to 100, so that'll always get your attention if you're the manager. So those are our two probably best prospects. I can't wait to see Francis Martez now more comfortable, having been in the big leagues again. This will be a different spring training for him. There's going to be a number of kids, whether it's Riley Farrell, a reliever, who has some Texas roots, or Garrett Stubbs again, who's a young catcher who played in Double A, another guy that I'm looking forward to. So there's a number of players that will get a ton of playing time, especially because I plan to rest some of the more star players early in the spring.
You talk about, you know, certain players grabbing your attention. I think Marwin Gonzalez grabbed everyone's attention across the league this season. Going into next season, have you thought about how you'll utilize Marwin?
Yeah, so I'm going to use him a lot because he's really good. But every year, so I got here in 2015, and Marwin Gonzalez came in my office and he said, AJ, I don't see where I'm going to play. I'm like, just stay with us. I know at that time it was like Jed Lowry's at shortstop and Luis Valbuena's at third and Jose Altuve's at second. We'll find a spot. Chris Carter was at first. We'll find a spot for you. Ended up playing every day at shortstop and then quickly at first base throughout the year. 2016, he walks in my office. He's like, AJ, I don't know where I'm going to play. And I'm like, I don't know, but you probably need to play a little bit of outfield. So get a left field glove, go out in left field, shag some balls, take some work with Gary Pettis. And he ends up playing all seven games of the World Series in left field. He's going to walk in my office in 2018, and he's going to say, AJ, I don't know where I'm going to play. And I'm going to say, shut up and go back to your locker. You know how this goes. So I think, you know, he's going to play somewhere. He comes in my office. It's a great visual of, like, five gloves and is like, which one do you want me to use? And I'm like, not that one, not that one, maybe that one. And that's Marwin at his best. So, you know, depending on how the offseason goes, you know, there's the DH ability. There's going to be some DH days for Jose Altuve and George Springer. There's going to be some DH days for Yuli Gurriel and Evan Gattis. And chances are Marwin's the answer to fill in for those guys. And you look up and Marwin's going to get 500 plate appearances and hopefully perform the way he did this year.
And you'll have Jake Marisnyk back healthy, so that really helps the outfield picture.
It'll help a ton. And we missed him in the World Series because of the left-handed pitching that the Dodgers threw, and we didn't quite have the answer. And what a great energy provider. He really did find his swing. He's a fan favorite because of the way he plays with his hair on fire. Provides some speed on the bases. Like there's an electrifying component of Jake that we're gonna love to get back.
If you were to name Marwin as the everyday left fielder, that would hamper his ability to fill in at the other positions.
Yeah, I don't really – I mean, I don't think I'm going to name him anything because I think he's just going to – he's a super utility, but he's an everyday player. You know, I think there's two things that come out of this season. We can stop calling Jose Altuve short. He's the MVP. And we can stop calling Marwin a utility player because he's an everyday player. He just plays five or six different positions. So yes, we'll find a spot for both of them.
Sarah, you have anything more for us on Twitter?
Yeah, AJ, there's some curiosity on Twitter about Colin Moran. How is he doing, and what do you expect out of him?
You know, one of the scariest incidents on the field I've ever been a part of is when he fouled the ball off his face in Baltimore, and you go out there, and he doesn't really know what's going on, and he was in a ton of pain, and we tried to get him up, and he almost passed out. And then we realized the severity of that injury. And to have him come back and get to the big leagues and just to be around for the better part of September was awesome. He's got a chance to make our team as a bench player. He's going to compete with, you know, the Tony Kemp and Tyler White and the extra bat off the bench. He can play first and third. We're going to introduce left field to him a little bit because that seems to be where most of the at-bats are going to be. The DH is a possibility for him. He can really hit. But he's healthy now, and I think he's going to have a full offseason. He works very closely with Jeff Albert, who is our new assistant hitting coach. And so having Jeff Albert in the big leagues, I think, will help Colin Moran when he gets here. to have somebody that he really trusts as a hitting coach and see if he can duplicate the numbers he's put in the minor leagues and apply to the big leagues.
A.J. Hinch is our guest. 2018 Astros season tickets are on sale now. Enjoy some of the best seats at Minute Maid Park. Save money and receive great benefits throughout the season. Call 1-877-9-ASTROS or visit astros.com/season tickets to get your seats today. We'll have more of Astroline right after this on the Astros Radio Network.
Bird at third. He's a tying run. Hicks at first. Runs pretty well. He represents the go-ahead run.
And when you so badly need a ground ball double play, who better to have pitching than a pitcher named Ground Chuck? Morton with that great ground ball rate percentage.
Here's a 1-1. Ground ball softly hit left side. Fielded by Bregman. He goes home with it. The tag by McCann. Did he hold on to the baseball? He did. Bird is out at the plate. Two outs.
What a great decision by Bregman. And you cannot teach that type of thinking in that quick of a time that Alex Bregman put a perfect throw for McCann to put a tag on the runner at home.
Time for a little disclosure. When he made that throw, I said, what is he doing, AJ?
Right. Well, let me tell you a funny story about that. And I think he shared this in his interview. But in September, he fielded that ball and he threw it to first. Didn't care about the run, and we grabbed him when he came off and said, hey, when we get to the postseason, we conserve runs. You got to get the guy at home if you don't have a double play in order. And so, you know, I think we put the fear of God in him that he was going to throw every throw to home, and I want to throw every throw to home, but he had great instincts there. That play when he got Bird out was incredible. I mean, it took a perfect throw, and McCann doesn't get enough credit for holding on to that ball. Later into the World Series, when he did it against the Dodgers, it was a little bit of an easier play. He was out by, foot as opposed to a few inches.
Yeah,
so it was an incredible defensive play.
The one on Bird, that everything had to be just perfect on that.
No doubt. And we needed that to cut off a run. And again, I think it shows the difference between the regular season and the postseason is the runs are so massive in the postseason. You score the first run in Game 7 when George Springer came around and scored in Game 7. All of us felt, oh man, we got this. We're going to win. It was the first inning. It was the first hitter, and we felt better about it. And that's how the postseason lives, as opposed to in the regular season. There's a little bit less stress either way. Whenever that first run goes across the board. Mm-hmm.
Sarah, what do you have for us?
Yeah, we have a question that came in through Twitter using the hashtag Astroline. Melvin wants to know, going back to earlier in the summer, how was that Bagwell Hall of Fame induction, and how did the players on the team react to it?
Well, our players love the fact that we have former players that come around. Nolan Ryan's around a lot. Craig Biggio's around a lot. Jeff Bagwell, Enos Cabell. We saw Roy Oswalt came around quite a bit. Lance Berkman comes from time to time. So we welcome that into our clubhouse. They've got something to give every player. I want every one of these guys to feel comfortable coming in our clubhouse. When Bagwell went to the Hall of Fame, Bagwell's, very serious by nature, but he's done a great job in the last couple of years just sitting around the cafeteria or sitting in the clubhouse, sitting in my office and just sharing his expertise. And so when he got to the Hall of Fame, our players felt connected to him because he's been around and he's been in our clubhouse and he's got relationships that will last and throughout the game. So I commend him for his participation around us because as a private person, he's a quiet guy by nature. For him to come out and work with Yuli Gurriel on picks at first base or talk to George Springer about, about his stance. We don't want him to hit like Baggy, but that pays dividends to our players that we can't replace.
Gurriel came a long way this year defensively.
He came a long way. I don't think he was too keen on being on the right side of second base because he was, his whole life he's been at third base or shortstop. And I have to give credit. Jeff Bagwell started in spring training. Alex Cora, who's now the manager of the Red Sox, did a great job every day hitting balls to him because the play where you notice the first baseman is when they don't pick the ball at first base. And so the best friend of Carlos Correa on a deep throw from shortstop or Bregman on a throw on the run or Altuve when he's up the middle, and we've shifted him up there, is Gurriel being able to control the ball that's low or move on the base if a throw's offline. And he worked a ton with Rich Dower and Alex Cora and Jeff Bagwell and guys that could help him. And he took it serious. And I think it became pretty apparent to him when you watch Alex Bregman play third, like, I'm probably not going to play third. And I look at Carlos Correa, I'm probably not going to play short. First base was where he's going to get his at-bats, and he took it to heart.
And with the at-bats, he was so much more productive this year than a year ago. Was that just a case of being accustomed to playing here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if you look at all of us and we just drop ourselves in the middle of a foreign country and not only that, but you're going to go to the highest level, it's got to be a culture shock for any of us. And he'd taken some time off between the time that he left Cuba to when we signed him. And in baseball, that timing is hard to get back. And I don't think he was comfortable. I think he joined the perfect team. You know, I think the Latin culture that we have in our infield, the ballpark fits him perfectly because he's a predominantly pull hitter. He's a very good addition. And when we hit him down at the bottom of the order, you know, we could sneak up on some guys, but the better he hit, the more I had to move him up. And then he came up with some of the biggest home runs you could imagine in the World Series.
He was truly amazing. You can get all your postseason and World Series merchandise at the Astros Team Store. Purchase customized jerseys, Astros gear, hats, and more. Visit astros.com/teamstore to see what's available today. Sarah, do you have another question for us on Twitter?
Sure. AJ, Eric wants to know, going back to the postseason, players, there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot going on. They want to know how you manage them and if you manage them differently based on the pressure. So, like, for example, Marwin had a baby during the postseason. Right. How do you handle that situation?
Well, I think for me, I try to be consistent every day. One thing I've always told our players is they will know what to expect out of me every single day. And so whether that's game one against the Mariners or whether that was, game seven of the World Series, they have to know what they're going to get out of me, whether it's my personality, the expectations, even my, whether it's a hot temper or a cool demeanor, whatever that's going to be, they're going to know. And so I don't manage differently as much as I think when you get to the postseason, you know, you try to enjoy it with them and you try to, you know, I try to two or three days to go without me having a personal conversation with every one of our players. And that, at some, you know, some are a little bit quicker than others, or some are in my office, some are on the field. Some are personal about like Marwin's baby or things and relationships and things they're in. It's just part of managing nowadays is connecting with players. It's in my personality. It's how I work. And I don't do anything different from day one to the end of the year.
Do you have another one?
Sure. This is a little bit of a different question, but how do you see the bullpen shaping up next year?
Well, I think a bullpen is one of our strengths, and I know that's not necessarily how people are going to see it, but you know, whether it's in sports or in nowadays in society, we kind of have a short memory. We try to think whatever we saw last was what they're going to be, and that's not the case. I mean, there's time after time where Ken Giles comes in and strikes out the side, and Will Harris and Chris Devinsky and Francis Martez and Joe Musgrove just turned over a whole new level of performance when he went to the bullpen. I consider it a strength, and so I think those names are going to be in there. There's going to be a surprise guy. There's going to be, you know, if we can get Tony Sipp, you know, back to 2015 form where I gave him the ball in game seven, I mean, I'm sorry, in the seventh inning of the wild card game, if you think about that style of pitcher would be a great addition for us again. We're going to sign a guy or two or trade for a guy or two, and I think it's going to be a really strong group. If Brad Peacock ends up there, that's as versatile and as good a bullpen guy as there is on our team, so... it shapes up very similar to how it finished. I think we're going to have to get back to using our guys and not lean on the same guy over and over like we did in the World Series.
You mentioned Giles earlier. What would you presume, knowing him very well, to be his mindset as he goes to spring training?
He'll be fine. I think he'll be excited and ready to go. You know, I think to be a closer in the big leagues, you know, you do have to have that short memory because the only time you're really talked to after the media is either if you have a consecutive streak of saves alive or if you blow one. And more times than not, that he's the guy that has to stand up there when things don't go well or if he gives up a hit or a homer. And we put these guys in these volatile situations where there's really no upside. It's all downside. And his mindset will be fine. He came in my office and spent a lot of time during the World Series. And, we communicate well. He's a tough kid, and he throws 100. And throwing 100, we'll pay off over the spring.
And doesn't it make such a difference for everybody to be part of a world championship team, no matter what they happen to do in those last few games of the season, and they come to the spring knowing that they were part of the ultimate team?
Yeah, no, they all did something to get us there or to help us get the ring. And even, you know, you look back and I think about Josh Reddick, who didn't have the best World Series, except he ran down a couple balls in right center. He threw a great ball from right field. He came up with a big hit in the postseason against the Yankees. Like, there's something that you can get to every player, and that's part of my job is to remind them that not of what they did wrong or what they do right. And that's a different style of coaching than maybe how I was brought up or maybe how they used to do it. But encouragement goes a long way. And if you remind these guys what they did to help us contribute and what they did to contribute to help us win, that's pretty powerful.
Well, the word team really does describe this bunch. We saw that combination of different people stepping forth, and certainly Charlie Morton was great, wasn't he?
Charlie Morton, and you know, you look at Brad Peacock, and again, like an unsung hero is Francisco Liriano came in Game 6 and Game 7 and got some really big outs. He was barely used in the World Series, and Luke Gregerson, you know, who again didn't pitch a ton in the World Series, but did a lot of good things as an Astro. And it, you know, whether it's a pinch hit or whether it's a moving a runner over or whether it was driving a run in, or you know, we used 24 out of the 25 guys that were on the roster. The one guy didn't get into the World Series was Juan Centeno, but as the third catcher, he didn't get a chance to play. But it took every one of those guys to beat the Dodgers.
Thanks so much for joining us, A.J. Hinch, tonight on Astroline here. And our studio producer, Bob Elliott, our producer-engineer, Matt Boltz, Anita Sagal, our senior vice president of marketing. Thanks also to Lauren and Sarah, and good night from our show here, sponsored by the Carbach Brewing at Pluckers.
This has been a production.
And whoever in this crowd wasn't standing before, well, they're getting to their feet now.
Of the Houston Astros.
This place is rocking right now.
Radio Network.